It is June 2nd, 2017. You are looking live at Athens, Georgia. This is episode 646 of the Will Leach Experience Podcast on Sports Center Earth. I am the aforementioned Will Leach, and thank you for spending part of your day with me. We just got done with all these quarter poll marks. The phrase quarter poll just sounds weird. I don't know why. All these roundups of the first quarter of the MLB season. And of course, once you get the All-Star break, you'll do the halfway mark. But to me, the baseball season is 6 months long. Like, it takes 6 months out of the year, and there's very clear delineations. The first 2 months are like when you kind of figure out what's going on, what kind of team you have. The second 2 months is when you have to come up to the trade deadline, figure out, are we in? Are we out? What are we doing? And then you have the stretch run. So I like to break it down in that the third of the way season, then two-thirds of the way season. So I wrote a piece for Sports on Earth that went up, depending on when you're listening to this, went up Thursday, looking at each team in Major League Baseball, kind of where they stand at the third pole of the season. So, but I wanted today, I'm very excited to have one of my favorite writers and one of our baseball writers here at Sports on Earth is Cliff Corcoran. And he is, he writes for us. He writes for Boston.com. You see him on MLB Network. He's a co-host of one of the rotating co-hosts of the Infinite Inning podcast. He is awesome. Cliff, thank you for coming on with me.
No, thanks for having me. Okay. I should point out up top, incidentally, because I know you'll get angry tweets about it, that the quarter pole is a quarter mile from the finish, not a quarter way through the race.
Yeah, this is like the thing with depending on what part of the country you live in, whether it's quarter till two or quarter of two.
Yep.
Like, my argument is, if it's a quarter of two, the time is actually 1:15. Like, it's a quarter of the way to two, but quarter after. Anyway, never mind. This is a big question that drives me crazy. I don't want to go down this rabbit hole. Okay, so I obviously I love your stuff, and I'm very excited to talk to you about this. I want to do this again around the trade deadline at the two-thirds poll, whatever that is. At that point, I think that's
it would actually be the one-third poll because it's how much is left.
But it's just pi. Let's just say pi. Let's just use that to stand up for all numbers. So I wanna go basically through each division, see what teams are doing, what they've kind of been happy with so far, where teams feel like they should be, what we should look for. Basically a status report on each division / each team. Some teams will skip over because who cares? But no offense, San Diego. I like the idea. I'm glad we were talking at the exact moment where San Diego has had the highlight of its season. They just swept the Cubs at home. That's it. Put it on the highlight reels at the end of the year. And now we can kind of move on. So some teams will skip over a little bit, but I want to like see just kind of where all these divisions stand and what we're kind of looking for at the one-third poll marker, the two-thirds poll marker, whatever. All right, so are you ready? Are you amped? Are you psyched?
I'm ready. This shouldn't take long at all.
Okay, good. Exactly. This is easy.
It's just everything.
Yeah, we could just literally do 2 hours on each team, but I'm sure we'll be fine otherwise. Okay, so we will start with the National League East. We'll start with the National League East because it's really easy and can get this off to a good pace start. My question, I guess my major question to you is this. There's two teams, I think, in Major League Baseball. We'll get to the other one when we get to talk about the AL West, that seem to already be in kind of rest and tweak mode. Like, it was funny when Harper got suspended. I was like, I don't know. I mean, three games off might – think of it like a LeBron thing. Like, think of it like he give him a little siesta in the middle of the season because you're going to need him to be healthy and rocking in October. Not only – I know they don't have the biggest lead. I think, actually, the Astros have the biggest lead. But to me, Washington not only has this 9.5 game lead or however long big the lead is, I don't see any of the other teams in this division actually even getting to 500. I'm curious. That's my two questions. One, let's look at Washington first. We'll get to that division in a second. Look at Washington first. Are they in rest and tweak mode? Are they really just kind of in, make sure everybody's healthy, maybe figure out center field, maybe figure out the bullpen, but otherwise it seems pretty smooth sailing for them?
I do think absolutely. I'm really looking at the Nationals. And I know you said we'll get to that other team later, but the Nationals right now, with the Cubs struggling, look like the best team in baseball to me. And, you know, like you said about Harper, he didn't get hurt in that fight. He's got a couple of days off. With Harper's injury history, to me, there's a lot of, you know, how it's kind of scary being on top because everybody's aiming for you. You know, they already lost Adam Eaton for the season, basically. You know, with Harper's injury history, I feel like their goal for the rest of the season is keep everybody healthy, keep Harper healthy, keep Strasburg healthy, You know, I just wrote an article about for Sports on Earth about durable players, and Max Scherzer was on that list, so I've now jinxed him. So you got to keep Max Scherzer healthy. You know, yeah, they're where they need to be. That maybe get Trey Turner going a little bit. Michael Taylor is performing better than he has in the past, because it seems like every other year Michael Taylor gets his chance to be the regular center fielder because somebody gets hurt. So far this year is going a little bit better. But yeah, just, you know, try to keep Zimmerman hot. You know, they are absolutely in kind of coast and tweak mode.
Are you of the school that's like, why haven't they traded for David Robertson already? When's that happening? Or do you think like Kota Glover seems to have now kind of taken that closure spot? But again, not, we all know how we overrate the closer idea. Is this bullpen good enough? That to me seems the thing, even though I don't think it's quite the disaster as everyone's always afraid it's going to be. That feels like the obvious place to pick up some pieces when it comes July.
Yeah, and that is, but I don't think it's something that they need to do yet exactly. You know, I mean, I guess the question is, do you want those other teams to fall out of the race a little bit more? Do you want to wait for the market to develop on those guys? I mean, I think obviously there's going to be a lot of competition for pitching because everybody always needs pitching. There's a fair amount of it out there now. I think you could also look at Kelvin Herrera as a target, who's a guy who the Royals are have pancaked this year, and he's only got 1 year left next year on his contract or before free agency. You could even look at Jim Johnson from within the division, and there's a number of setup type guys that are out there that you could pick up. I don't think they need to make that move yet. Would it help to beat the market a little bit? Maybe. But at the same time, you know, I think like June is a good month for a team like this, if they're in that kind of tweak mode, to see what else they have, to see, you know, if anybody rises to the occasion, if Sean Kelly can straighten out, if, you know, don't act too quickly, because there's really no rush there.
And then I really think you can lump up the rest of the division into kind of one big thing. I'm curious, of those four teams, the Mets, the Braves, the Marlins, and the Phillies, which one do you think is most likely to get to 500? And do you think they'll actually make it?
It's a good question. I mean, the Mets coming into the season, the whole story on the Mets coming into the season was, look what they were able to do last year despite all those injuries. If only they could stay healthy, they could really give the Nationals a run. And of course, they can't stay healthy. And it's interesting because we see this, we're kind of seeing the Dodgers do it, although the Dodgers are having a fine season. They had the similar kind of narrative on the Dodgers. If they could look what they did last year, if they could stay healthy. And the Nationals are a team that has had a lot of injury trouble in the past. So far, so good, with the exception of a significant injury to Eaton. The Mets, you know, it's kind of that thing where you still think, well, you know, if they can get Cespedes and Syndergaard back in the next month or two, maybe they could kind of piece things together at the end. Ahmed Rosario has been outstanding in the minor leagues. He's got to come up and bump Jose Reyes off the roster at some point. I think they're just waiting for the Super 2 deadline there. And of course, if it's a lost season, you may not want to burn some service time on a top prospect like that. But I think he's got something like a 19-game hitting streak down in AAA. And the assistant general manager had said something like, oh, well, you know, the league is adjusting to him and he's starting to see more breaking pitches, so we'll see how he'll do. Yeah, 19-game hitting streak. He's doing great. Bring that guy up. And if you get a couple of guys healthy, the Mets, I think, still have a chance to, I don't know if necessarily be contenders, but I think get up to that 500 level. Although looking at the league as a whole right now, that 500 level, if you get a couple of games over 500, you might be in play for that second wild card spot. So, you know, I do think that the Mets are still the team I look at there. But, you know, the Braves, when Freddie Freeman comes back, you know, they've played better. And if you look at third order record, which I'm sure I'm going to bring up more than once in this conversation, which goes beyond Pythagorean by looking at the elements of run scoring and run prevention, hits and doubles and walks and strikeouts and things, and figures out how many runs a team should score based on that, and then figures out a expected one loss record from there. The Marlins are the second best team in the division with a third order winning percentage of 479 right now. So, but really, it's the Nationals division by a long shot. And if any of those teams emerges, like you say, even to get a game or two over 500, it will be a significant accomplishment for them.
Yeah, the Marlins, I looked over the roster today, the Marlins are the one team that feels like they should be better. Like, I know the rotation's a mess, but that lineup is still, like, Stanton's starting to come along, starting to come back around now, and they feel like they could be scary. But yeah, I think this is, the question is whether they win by 15 or 20 games. I am so you know, I don't live in New York anymore, so I'm that jerk that's like, why are we talking about the Mets so much again? Like, seriously, why? Like, unless the mascot flips somebody off, which we remind everyone, a mascot cannot actually flip something off when they have four fingers. So I just remind you, very important thing, there is no, in fact, middle finger.
That actually gets, wait, that gets back to the quarter pole conversation.
Yes, it
do you
does.
Count, right. Do you count the thumb? Because right. You could argue that regular humans don't have a middle finger, but mascots do.
That's true. That's I tell you, like, but one of my favorite stories when I worked for New York, when I was working full time for New York Magazine, I was doing running a big story about I wrote a column for the magazine about Mr. Met, the Mets, and Mr. Met and the illustrator came over to me and he said, "Well, we need, what kind of illustration do we get?" And I'm like, "Well, can we get like a photo or like an illustration of Mr. Met looking sad?" And he said, "Well, Mr. Matt is by definition always smiling. So that's going to be hard for me to do." But now I think he, in future illustrations, I think we have a model with which to work now. All right. So that is the National League East. We will go now to the National League Central, which I just wrote about on Wednesday of this week, about how, you know, 19 months ago, you had 397 win teams or more in this division. The third place team was the one that ended up wiping out the top two teams above them in the playoffs in the span of about a week, including destroying the Cardinals on my 40th birthday, which was such a nice little gift to receive from the NLDS that year. So this felt like the dominant division in baseball. And now I wrote it the day after all five teams had lost. The Cubs have just finished up getting swept by the Padres. They play the Cardinals this weekend in a series that has a lot different context than I think people thought it was going to be. I'm curious of the, we'll get to the Cardinals. We'll get to the Cardinals and the Cubs in a second. Of the Milwaukee, Cincinnati, and Pittsburgh, Milwaukee's first place now. How of those three, do you think any of the three of them, or more than one of the three of them, are legitimate contenders moving forward, not just in the division, but in the wild card?
Well, again, I think it depends on where you put that second wild card spot, and that's going to depend on the conversation we have about the NL West.
Right, right.
But I think it's possible that the second NL wild card spot could be a low 80s win team, an 84, 85 win team. And if that's the case, I think what I've seen from the Brewers thus far suggests that they could hold on and be in that kind of race. You know, they've had a fantastic performance from their offense thus far. Their starting rotation, and again, you wrote about it. I just read that article, solid piece. Their starting rotation is getting the job done, and there is some talent there. And there's more talent beneath it. They have, you know, again, this is a rebuilding team that is at the end stage of that rebuild. So that talent is bubbling under. You know, they were expected to start to move up the standings, maybe not this year, maybe next year or the year beyond. And, you know, the fact that they're doing it now is just them slightly ahead of schedule. It's not a terrible team. It's a solid team. They need help in the bullpen. And, you know, they need their middle infielders to step up a little bit. Jonathan Villar, you know, has been awful so far, but we know he's a better player than that. He's only 26. Orlando Arcia is there for his glove mostly, but he was a top prospect. You want him to step up. But I feel like the Brewers can hold, you know, they are, I think, at their core, close to a 500 type team, and they could hold on and do better than that, particularly if they make an addition or if they get some reinforcements from the minor leagues. The Pirates, I think, have got a little too far to climb. You know, Marte, yes, will come back. Teon, hopefully, will come back. Although in both of those guys, we don't know what impact for Marte, half a season off, for Teon, you know, whatever, the treatments for his cancer. We don't know what impact that's going to have on their performance once they get back. But Andrew McCutchen's bat seems to be dead and gone. You know, Gong's not coming back. I don't know if they can recover from that many losses. So, and then the Reds, I just don't believe in. The Reds certainly have nice things going on. They're another kind of late stage rebuild team, but they've had some hot performances early in the season that I find harder to believe in. And I don't believe in their pitching staff at all.
Yeah. Don't believe in Bronson Arroyo it's amazing that he's still in the league. It's kind of amazing. Like I want him to hang in, not just because I want the Cardinals to keep batting against him, but also I just want him to keep hanging on because bless his heart. Okay, let's start with the Cardinals then before we get to those other two teams. The Cardinals, you know, like everybody else in this division, their frustrations and difficulties early have been, they've caught a break because the Cubs have been struggling so much. My when I as you know, I am a Cardinals fan, and when I squint and the way that I make myself feel better about how things are going for the Cardinals, I still think they have the best rotation in the division. Even if Leake takes a step back, even if Waka, they've skipped a couple starts for him already. They're trying to loosen, they keep him kind of healthy. But I still feel like Wainwright's coming back around. Martinez is looking like the ace that everyone was kind of waiting for him to be. I feel like that is a foundation that nobody else in the division has. The problem is they've stopped hitting almost entirely, and they have like these defensive issues. They have a manager that is not the best, we'll say. But I still like, generally speaking, when the Cardinals have a good rotation, they are good, and when they don't have a good rotation, they are not. I find myself hanging on to the fact that this rotation is very solid, and in the bullpen, they're getting rid of some of the Jonathan Broxtons and bringing in some of the younger pitchers in there. I can squint and see this as a wild card team, even if their start's been pretty frustrating.
Yeah, and again, I think the talent is there and the target is low. Absolutely, I think the rotation is legitimate. I think the offense, there's potential for players to start to play up to their levels of ability, which they have not done in a number of cases thus far. I'm not necessarily optimistic about a 34-year-old Yadier Molina bringing his bat around, but I think elsewhere they can get larger contributions in the outfield. Ledmys Diaz hopefully has more to offer, can get closer to what he did last year than what he's done so far this year. And there is some level of depth there. So I do think that the Cardinals have potential. It's not a high ceiling, but in terms of being in the wild card, I think they should be in that wild card race.
All right, so let's figure out what's going on with the Cubs. Let's solve the Cubs. It was one thing. It's funny. A week and a half ago, it looked like the Cubs were about to take control of this division. They just wiped out the Reds, I think, and they looked like they were rolling. And then they got swept by the Dodgers, which is whatever. The Dodgers are really good. They're hot right now. And then they got swept by San Diego. And it's funny, for all the talk of the rotation getting older, and I think some of that's true. I think you can argue that their most right now their hottest starter is Eddie Butler, which is a little disturbing. And I think particularly a guy like Lackey seems to be wobbly a little bit. But really, the hitting has been surprising. Like, Schwarber has really struggled. Really, Bryant's been good. Rizzo's come around a little bit, but there are like a guy like Contreras, a guy they thought was really going to make this big step forward, has not done that this year. What is going on with them, and are they really just waiting? Are they going to be able to flip a switch and kind of take control of this division again?
I have to believe they're going to, just because they're such a talented team and they were so good last year and they have so much good young talent. I mean, to me, I think to a large degree, yes, the rotation has taken a step back and maybe there's some age involved there. But the thing that really I see when I look at the Cubs, in a way, it's similar to the Cardinals in that their offense just hasn't found its gear yet. The difference being that the Cubs offense has a much higher gear than the Cardinals offense does if everybody plays up to their ability. Whether or not that's actually going to happen, and we are as much, young players that can cut both ways. There's that potential for improvement and continued adjustment because they're young and a lot of them are still relatively new to the league. And, you can kind of dream on a guy figuring something out and starting to play up to his ability. But at the same time, the struggles can happen in the opposite direction. I think there's more volatility there than with the kind of veterans that I think are more prevalent in the Cardinals lineup. But you go right through it, and guys like Contreras and Baez and Russell and Schwarber, absolutely. And even Ian Happ, who they just called up, who was, one of their high better prospects that was still in the minor leagues. Now they have him playing a lot of center field, and he's getting the job done, but it's not spectacular. You feel like if just a couple of those guys break out, then they can start to take off. Because Brian, and even Rizzo too, like you said, is not having your typical, Anthony Rizzo's like a top four MVP guy every year. And this year he's just kind of, ordinary to a little bit above in terms of a first baseman. There's a lot of bad batting average going on in their team, which can be fluky, in particular with Schwarber. Schwarber's an interesting case because my thing with him has always been, will his bat, as great as the potential there is, be able to compensate for his deficits in every other facet of the game? And thus far this season, it's not. But by wins above replacement, he's been their worst player because he's not hitting that much and he doesn't do anything else that helps you. But the trick is, when you look at it, he's got 8 home runs. He's drawn 27 walks. His walk and strikeout rates are very similar to what they were in his rookie year. You know, he's hitting for power. He's doing everything he needs to do, but he's hitting 165 because the balls just aren't dropping in. And you think that's going to happen eventually. Those balls have got to start falling in for him. You know, now in his case, he's a slow guy. He's not going to get the kind of infield leg hits that other guys might. But you feel like that's going to happen. And for Anthony Rizzo, who's hitting 227, that's going to go up. You know, a lot of times, and we'll probably talk about it in other divisions, you get guys who are hitting 335, 350, 370 at this point in the season. You're like, you know that batting average is coming down. I feel like with the Cubs, they have a lot of guys where you know that batting average is going up. The trick is with a young guy like Schwarber is that 165 on the scoreboard every time he comes up to the plate going to get into his head and kind of create its own, perpetuate its own sort of situation. I still feel like the Cubs can come around and get it done. But, you know, it's some things have to get worked out, and it's not so much, I don't know what I'm doing. I'm a dead end there, but yeah, I think they can get it done.
I think it's telling the way that the Cardinals and the Cubs are both handling internally their struggles early. The Cardinals are freaking out. Like, they're trading Matt Adams. They're waving Jonathan Broxton. They're promoting Paul DeJong. Like, the Cardinals are like trying to actively shake up what's happening, and the Cubs are like, we're going to be fine. Everybody just chill out. And I think that tells you a little bit about not only the confidence in the talent, but the actual talent there. So I think you're right, as I'm sad to say. I feel like the Cubs have given a little bit of an opening for teams, and I suspect that opening will be shut soon. All right, let's go to the National League West, which to me, the most intriguing part about this, again, we can probably just skip the Padres, generally speaking, other than congratulations on your sweep of the Cubs. To me, I find it funny that the Dodgers have had issues so far. Their rotation's kind of rotating in and out, and some guys are hot, and some guys are hurt, and some guys are coming in, and Gonzalez can't hit homers anymore. Peterson's been hurt and struggling. Justin Turner's hurt right now. Yasiel Puig's hitting 229. The Diamondbacks and Rockies are having this like really exciting thing that everyone can't, like, wow, this is so great. The Diamondbacks and Rockies are making this big breakthrough, and the Dodgers are still in first place. The Dodgers are still there. I think that's what the Dodgers have done and what they've been able to put together, I think, is really kind of, the Cubs have overshadowed a little bit, and I think because the Dodgers haven't had a lot of postseason success or enough postseason success, I think it's been forgotten. But for all the struggles they've had, they're the two teams that are the talk of baseball are still actually behind them in the standings right now.
Yeah, the Dodgers are really just one game behind the Nationals in overall record. They have the same number of wins. What they're doing this year is a lot like what they did last year. You know, and maybe you want to give credit to Dave Roberts, or maybe you want to just give credit to the depth of the organization. But, you know, they're dealing with a significant number of injuries. I mean, everybody except Kershaw from the rotation has been on and off the disabled list. And you mentioned Turner, Peterson, Gonzalez, Tolles is out for the year. They've had a lot of injuries throughout the lineup, but they keeping on, and a lot of it's because of depth. They were able to call up Cody Bellinger, a top prospect, and he was up supposedly for a short time, won a job. He's in that lineup now, maybe for the next 6 years, you know, or 7 years. You know, Corey Seager's still doing really well. Yasmani Grandal's been outstanding. Of course, Kershaw is Kershaw. Even though he's not quite the super elite Kershaw of recent years, he's still one of the best pitchers in baseball. They've got a very strong bullpen, which can help to a large degree. And again, they have depth. When they had those injuries in the rotation, there seemed to always be somebody else they could bring in from the bullpen or the minors. Maybe not pitch great, but enough to keep them until those guys got back. And the other thing is, those guys have been coming back. You know, they haven't lost any of their pitchers, with the exception of Scott Kazmir, who I'm not even counting at this point. Right. But, you know, the guys, McCarthy, Ryu, Maeda, they've all come back off the disabled list and started to contribute again. The Dodgers are a good team, a good organization. They've got great management. It all clicks for them. And yeah, the fact that the Diamondbacks and Rockies have gotten off to such a great start and they're still looking up at the Dodgers, I think that says that the Dodgers are going to be where we expected them to be come the end of the season.
And that leads us, I think, to the central biggest question really in the National League over the next couple of months. How much are the Rockies and the Diamondbacks for real? And I looked at both of these teams in my piece today, and I look taking a look at them and kind of like I think they're tied, or at least when we're taping this, they're tied. Doing kind of a dossier to me, I feel like the Diamondbacks are more for real. I think both these teams are really good, and I think it's very possible these will be the two wildcard teams. But if I had to bet on one moving forward, I would have to say it's Arizona. I think that the lineup is already pretty solid now, and will be even better when AJ Pollock comes back. Greinke is the ace now that they've been waiting for, and Zach Godley is out of nowhere. Robbie Ray is terrific, and John Walker's going to be back soon. Obviously, I don't understand why they still have the closer that they have, that they do, but for me, moving forward, I think the Rockies, we can give them a little bit. I feel like they're relying a little bit. Arenado and Blackman are good, but like Gonzalez is down, Trevor Story's not having a great year. They're relying a lot on Mark Reynolds, and I feel like they're relying a lot on young starters under the age of 25. My argument would be, it's possible both these teams will hang on all year, but if I had to pick one that would be more likely to hang on, I would say it's Arizona. Do you agree?
I absolutely agree. I wrote about some surprise teams in a few weeks ago and said I believe in the Diamondbacks. And then I wrote another piece today about some of these surprise teams and whether or not they should be buying or selling. And again, the Diamondbacks, I said they need that high leverage reliever, somebody to get Fernando Rodney out of town, basically. Their bullpen isn't great and they need some upgrades there, but the rotation is absolutely solid, and with the exception of Greinke, young, and their lineup is very good. The Diamondbacks are a fascinating case because a couple of years ago, coming out of the season where they made the big Greinke signing, I wrote something in anticipation of that offseason saying, you look at the Diamondbacks and all the young talent they have in the lineup and some of the young pitchers they have coming up, and if they could add one or two frontline pitchers, they could be a serious contender in 2016. And they added Greinke, but then the trade for Miller was a disaster, and Greinke didn't play well, and Pollock got hurt, and the whole thing just the bottom fell out on them. But then this year they got Pollock back. Greinke's pitching up to his abilities. They made some other adjustments in the roster. The Segura trade, which I kind of rolled my eyes at the time, worked out great for them. And then they flipped him for Walker, who's been very good. Everything's kind of come together for them nicely. They are a good team. They had some good, they talk about a house with good bones. They had good bones in this roster. I still don't like Yasmani Tomas ever putting a glove on his hand. And also Torey Lovullo is a rookie manager, is doing some interesting things at shortstop and at catcher, where he's kind of doing job shares with glove guys and bat guys and kind of getting the best of both worlds to some degree. Early in the season, their catching situation was not producing, but Chris Iannetta stepped up there and they keep a rotation going on there. I definitely believe in the Diamondbacks. I think the Diamondbacks are going to give the not only be in the wild card chase, but give the Dodgers a serious threat this year.
And what about the Rockies? Am I too down on them, or do they have the good bones, as you would put it?
The Rockies are interesting because another interesting case, and I've talked about them a lot. In early March, I saw them as a sleeper this year, but sleeper in the sense of they've had, however, it's six losing seasons in a row or something. This year, they look like a team that could get to 500, maybe a pinch over, and have a future because of some of the young players they brought up, whether it's Gray or Dahl or Story or and obviously having Arenado at the middle of that core. And then they had a lot of late injuries late in spring training, and I said, well, forget it. They're not that good a team that they can endure that. But they had a hot start anyway. So now they're in a situation where they got Desmond back, but he's not really hitting. Dahl is still a little while away from coming back. They need help at the corners because Reynolds has played so well that now Desmond is an outfielder, which he really should be anyway. But he's not hitting, and as you mentioned, Cargo's not hitting. But if Dahl comes back, maybe they can help that. I feel like they're going to settle down to kind of where I expected them to be, which is around 500 or a pinch above. But this brings it ties a bow on what we've been talking about in this whole league, like you said. If the Diamondbacks are a very good team, and we know the Dodgers are good, and we know the Nationals are good, then we've got, two division winners and one wild card team. And then who else is going to be really high above 500 in this league, right? May somebody in the Central hopefully will emerge, probably the Cubs. But are two teams in the Central going to be significantly above 500? Is anybody in the NL East going to get to 500? If the Rockies win 84, 85 games, I think they're going to be in that wild card mix with, you know, the second place team in the Central, and there's nobody going to be nobody else there, you know. So I feel like the Rockies do have the legs to get to that wild card game, and that's going to be a very interesting race. But I feel like the Diamondbacks probably have the first wild card spot locked down.
All right, so that brings us. I really don't. I said good for San Diego with the sweep of the Cubs. I think that's probably all we need to say there. San Francisco, you know, this season almost just kind of feels snake bit for them by this point. Do you see any way? They're 11, as we talked, they're 11 games under 500 and 11 games out of the wild card, for crying out loud. Is there any way for them to crawl themselves back into relevance?
I don't think so. They're nobody's hitting other than Posey and Belt. I mean, not even hitting a little bit. You look down their lineups, and they've got OPS pluses of 86, I think, is the third highest on the whole team. And it's Brandon Crawford, who spent some time on the DL. Now he's back, and maybe he'll, you know, come around a bit. Certainly, again, there are guys who can play up to their expected levels of performance, but there's not a lot there. And then the rotation, you know, you expect Cueto to pitch better or have better results. He's not really pitching that poorly. But I didn't see a lot from the Giants to begin with this season. You know, when Bumgarner comes back, obviously it'll be a huge boost to them. But I just don't see them getting off the mat. They weren't really that great a team last year. They kind of backed into the wild card game and they had Bumgarner there to win it. I just don't think that's happening for them.
Yeah, I mean, they really weren't that great during some of their World Series winning seasons either. But let's not relitigate all that again. All right, let's go over to the American League then. The American League, starting with the American League East, because we do not care about the real America. let's start at the bottom, because I want to talk about Toronto briefly. Everyone quite reasonably wrote them off. I think they were like whatever 6-19 or whatever they were. I don't know how they did in the game against the Yankees on Thursday night, but they're one game under 500 all of a sudden. And Dallas is back in the lineup, and Tulowitzki's back in the lineup. And you look at this division, you know, the Yankees are off to this nice start, and everyone's excited about them. Boston seems to have gotten back on track. Baltimore had that losing streak, but still trying to hang in. All of a sudden, Tampa Bay is two games over 500 and a half game out of the wild card. Do you think all five of these teams can remain in contention for the next couple of months? Because right now, there's really just 5.5 games separating them, and depending on how much you think the Yankees are for real or to keep at this pace, this looks like it could be as close as we're going to get to a 4 or 5 team race in baseball.
I do think that it's going to be close to that. I'm not a big believer in the Orioles. The Orioles have started to sink. I forget the exact number, but over their last, 20 games or something, they've lost a ton. They did just take 2 or 3 from the Yankees, but I don't believe in the Orioles. I think they're starting to sink and they're going to wind up in last place. I think the Blue Jays are going to get back over 500. But I think they did too much damage to themselves early in terms of wins to really compete with what I expect to be very good Red Sox and Yankees teams. The Rays are going to be the interesting one to watch because, you know, they're the team that it's hard. You know, it's always been the case with the Rays that it's hard to see it on paper. I don't know why with the Rays, when they're good, it's hard to see it, even though it's there. And when they're bad, they're bad. But they actually, if you look, I'll bring back third order record. You look at third order record, the Rays have a 614 winning percentage according to third order record, which is the third best in the league. I don't know if I buy into that completely, but so the Rays look like this little bit over 500. You know, when the Rangers had their winning streak and they kind of poked their nose over 500, I wrote a piece that said this is probably a high watermark for them. For the Rays, I don't think so. I think they can continue to climb a little bit. But I think ultimately the division. So I think you could have four teams above 500 and the Orioles not so far below. But I think ultimately it's going to come down to the Yankees and the Red Sox.
It's funny, I when I was researching the Yankees today, it kind of blew me away. I didn't realize how bad of a year Tanaka was having. Like, he's really struggling. He's like their worst starter right now. And when you look, Pineda's been fine. Severino has been terrific. And even they're getting, you know, league average performances from Sabathia and Montgomery. It's funny. It seems weird that we weren't as like they haven't really gotten much out of Sanchez yet. Obviously, Judge has been the major takeaway. To me, the Red Sox look like they're starting to become that team, particularly if Bryce can be healthy. They're starting to become the team that we thought was the best in this division. When it comes to the Yankees, they look really good, but it still feels, are they going to have enough to compete the away? Are they going to make a move? Where are the Yankees are at in that kind of stage of the competitive cycle?
Well, the Yankees are being driven by this tremendous offensive performance. And obviously, you mentioned Aaron Judge has kind of been at the head of that. They also got Brett Gardner slugging 529 with 11 homers. I mean, so the Yankees offense is going to come back down to earth to some degree. To what degree, we don't know. If it's going to be a complete collapse. At this point, I think Judge is for real. We knew he had the power, but, you know, the ability to control the strike zone at the major league level. He may not be for real at a 690 slugging percentage, but he's for real as an impact middle of the order major league bat. That offense nonetheless will come down a little bit, but I do believe the Yankees will make some additions that will boost their pitching, whether it's in the rotation. And I think that they're going to hang around. It's kind of interesting to look at the Yankees and the Red Sox side by side because they're kind of mirror images in terms of the offense. You know, the Red Sox kind of disappointing start had a lot to do with the fact that their offense has been underperforming and hasn't really gotten off the mat. And you can talk about whether or not that has, you know, something to do with the absence of, certainly the production of David Ortiz is missed, but whether or not the absence of his bat in the middle of the lineup has had an impact directly on the performance of the other hitters. That's kind of, you know, armchair psychology, and it's hard to prove, but it could be. But nonetheless, you've got a lot of hitters in the Red Sox lineup who should be hitting better than they are, and you would expect as the season goes on that their bats will come around, and a number of hitters in the Yankee lineup who are hitting well above where you expect them, and you expect they will come back down. Chase Headley already has significantly, but you expect them to come back down. And so they may be two ships that kind of pass in the night, and we'll get the result that we ultimately, you know, we originally expected with the Red Sox being on top. But like you said, with Severino emerging as kind of their staff ace, that's huge. With Pineda, who's always had good peripherals but wasn't always getting the results, that's a big deal. And they're doing a good job in the bullpen right now with Chapman on the DL. Now, we don't know to what degree the issues with his shoulder are going to linger or, you know, if he's going to come back and continue to be Aroldis Chapman, but they have a good bullpen nonetheless. I think the Yankees are real enough to hang around and cause some problems and certainly at least stick in the wild card race. But it's an interesting, you know, mirror image between them and the Red Sox on offense, which is where I think we have to keep our eyes right now, because that's the under and over performance aspects that should be evening out.
Yeah, and it does feel like that Boston. There's some guys on Boston that are you're waiting for them to really come around. Bradley and Benintendi, Bogarts and Betts have been good, but you wait for those guys to really get hot. You remember it was like, you know, that was the thing. It's like they brought in pitching, but their offense was going to be so good, and it's actually almost been the offense that's been down a little bit. It still looks to me that the Red Sox are the best. Do you agree that the Red Sox are the best team in this division?
I do. I mean, they were the best team in the American League over the last however many months to end last season. The fact that they got swept by Cleveland was stunning. And then they lost Ortiz, but they made the big trade for Sale. And, you know, in the ultimate accounting, runs matter on either side of the ball. They lost a significant amount of production in their lineup, but they added one of the best starters in baseball who has been pitching up to that. You know, Sale is having a better year this year than he had for the White Sox last year, and he was in the Cy Young conversation last year. So, you know, and now that Wright is healthy and Pomeranz has stayed healthy and he's striking out more than 11 guys per nine innings, and, you know, Porcello is, despite the fact that his ERA is higher, he's pitching about as well as he pitched last year. He's just, you know, been unlucky on hits. You know, Kimbrel's been outstanding in the bullpen. It's all there. It just kind of needs to snap into place. And there is this sense that it's starting to do that. And so I do think that the Red Sox are the best team in the division.
All right, let's go over to the Central. I don't know how much we need to say about the Royals other than when did they make that first trade and when does that – I feel like once they make that first trade, it's like, okay, open for business, and then there's just going to be kind of a plundering. The White Sox, you know, the White Sox, the frustrating thing is that their big two trade chips are the two guys really underperforming, Frazier and Quintana. So let's start with – I'm curious – I'm going to focus on Detroit, Cleveland, and Minnesota. Specifically Detroit – Cabrera doesn't seem to be hitting for a lot of power. Verlander's not had the superhuman season he had last year. Detroit looks to me like a team if a one more thing veers wrong, they might actually fall off a cliff.
Yeah, and I feel like they're very close to doing that right now. They've been below 500 over the last 10 games. I thought coming into the season that it would be Detroit that would be the team that challenged the Indians, because there was this thing in the offseason about, oh, well, the Tigers are going to have a fire sale. They traded Cameron Maben, and then they didn't do anything else. They kept everybody. And you're like, well, this was a team that was, a second place, a good second place team last year. And, they had some players who could come around, some performances that could improve. They could get more out of Norris and Fulmer. You thought they could get more out of Zimmerman, but maybe Zimmerman's a thing of the past at this point. Certainly Sanchez is. So you thought, well, there's no reason that the Tigers can't do it again. But they are an older team, and you're seeing Cabrera, who's now 34, I think, in his decline phase. Verlander, his walks are way up and his strikeouts are down. And, he had like a hot finish last year to get into that Cy Young race. Really, I think he should have won the Cy Young, but it was a kind of a burst. It wasn't a sustained performance over the whole season. Francisco Rodriguez has been horrendous. It's ultimately it's more of a middling team than you had hoped. They've also had some injury issues with Martinez having been out for a long time. He's back. Kinsler's out. It's just not really there. It's not coming together. I think that the Tigers probably actually, with the way they're going, are going to be a team that's going to be selling at the deadline. The question is, again, kind of like it was in the offseason, can they move any of these contracts that they have?
Okay, then let's look at Minnesota and see how much they can be taken seriously. Their offense, right now, Ervin Santana is pitching like Maddox. It's really kind of weird what Ervin Santana is doing. Obviously, Berrios has come in and looks like the pitcher they were waiting for. It doesn't look to me like they have enough pitching to hang around, but this could be a 500 team for a team that lost more than 100 games last year and is and as like their big star that was supposed to be Buxton, who's really not gotten it going at all. That seems like a pretty major step forward to kind of no matter what happens in their kind of like division chase.
Yeah, I feel the same way. The offense I think is coming together nicely. The narrative around the Twins right now is that they're winning so much because their defense is so great. They don't have the kind of overall team defense performance that, say, the Cubs had last year. Obviously, Buxton is outstanding and he's above replacement level despite barely hitting at all. Although his bat has been a little bit more, it's at least in the ballpark. It's at least, twitching. It's not lying there dead. But the offense is there. The defense is good, but it's not great, and it's not going to sustain. The performance they've gotten out of their pitching staff has largely been a fluke. Ervin Santana is benefiting greatly from the defense with all the fly balls that he gives up, but I don't think he's going to have a 1.75 ERA when we get to the end of the season. In fact, with Santana, and again, I mentioned the Tigers might be selling. The dilemma the Twins face right now is, do they buy into what's gone on with their team so far, or do they trade Ervin Santana? Because he's never going to be more valuable than he is right now. I mean, he's leading the majors in ERA and WHIP, and he's going to fall back down to earth. This is a 34-year-old pitcher who's always been fairly ordinary. But he's also been fairly, since his performance-enhancing drug suspension, he's been fairly durable. So he's a guy that you can say, well, we all know he's not going to be a one-something ERA guy, but he's going to give you 200 innings, next year, and maybe you can ride this hot streak through the end of the season, and they could get something significant for him, I think, possibly near the deadline. But that would require them to basically give up on this season that they're having. I think ultimately they are going to be close to a 500 team, regardless of whether or not they make that trade. Hector Santiago has already started to fall apart. He was hot early in the season. He was the guy who started last night when the Astros scored 17 runs. Hughes is back on the DL. It's nice to see Berrios come up and be that pitcher, like you said. But after Santana and Berrios, there's not much there, and I don't believe in Santana. And the other guys that they have, Kinsler's their closer. Well, he's in his walk year too, so maybe that's another guy you should cash in rather than ride out. I think that they have some nice things coming together in their offense, and they should look to the future. But I don't think they're going to make the postseason this year.
And then you look at Cleveland, the team that I think even more than Houston and Washington are the teams that are really dominating divisions right now. They were considered the biggest favorites in baseball of all the divisions. They're still kind of battling it out with the Twins there a little bit. But it's funny because, you know, you look at, I it reminds me a little bit of the Dodgers. Encarnacion's been a little bit of disappointment, though he's been coming on lately. Jason Kipnis has struggled. Carlos Santana struggled. Corey Kluber's been hurt. All this stuff's been going, everything's been going wrong, and they're still tied for first. when all that comes together, it still feels like when Cleveland gets everybody on the same page, and with Brantley being a major contributor again, this still feels like a team that's eventually going to take control of this division.
I think absolutely. I'm very impressed by what Brantley has been able to do coming back from really 2 years lost to that shoulder injury. Lindor continues to be an outstanding young player. 12 home runs and a 541 slugging percentage. I mean, we didn't know if he was going to hit enough. You know, as a prospect, we thought, well, he's got a remarkable glove. He's got a fantastic presence, and hopefully he'll hit enough. But he's been a very good hitter. He's only 23. Yeah, I think that, you know, and I have to say their catching situation was a disaster last year. And Yan Gomes has done a decent job, at least at the plate for them. So that's a nice kind of boost. They're going to get Kluber back real soon, and going back to third order record. Nobody in the division is more than a game over 500 per third order record, except for the Indians, whose third order record is 587. Despite all the things that have gone wrong with them thus far, and Kluber being out, third order wins believe that they should have a 587 winning percentage. So, I mean, I think that's they're going to get there eventually. Oh, sorry about the phone.
Oh, no worries. I'm just calling you to make sure you're still doing the podcast. But you got right? It. So you are. all right. So now we'll go to the AL West. We'll wrap up with the AL West. When you look at the Astros, I feel like they're the major story of this division. Not only are they have this huge lead, but they look like as close as we've seen to what the Cubs were doing last year. Like, everything is kind of going right for them. But what's even better is that you can still see spots where they can improve. It looks like the back half of the rotation, that you can see maybe a little in the bullpen. If they wanted to, they could even improve at first base if they wanted to go there. To me, the Astros, we talk about tweak, rest and tweak. The Astros are in such a good position because not only do they have this big lead, they've got the ability to improve and fix any problems they have along the way. This looks potentially like a 100-win team to me.
Yeah, I think the Astros, more so than the Nationals, look so good in part because of how bad the rest of their division is. I mean, the Astros were my pick to win this division coming into the season, and they're a legitimately very good team. But to me, the Nationals look like easily the best team in the National League right now. Whereas the Nationals look like the best team in the National League, the Astros, I'm not sold that they're necessarily the best team in the American League. Because like you said, the back half of their rotation, they've got two excellent starters in Keuchel and McCullers. And it's great to see McCullers, really in there on an everyday basis and living up to his potential. Keuchel having rebounded from an off year last year. But behind them, there's not a whole lot there. The bullpen's pretty good. The one thing that I really like most about this team is the depth in the lineup. And they're only carrying a three-man bench. But, you know, they've got two catchers who can hit with Gattis and McCann. They've got Marwin Gonzalez, who maybe should be starting at first base at this point, but is getting a lot of play in left field, and they can move him around, and he's been hitting. He's got 12 home runs. Marwin Gonzalez is slugging 638. That's going to come back down. But, you know, Jay Marisnik is hitting well, and they've got pieces they can move around, and, you know, there's depth there, and there's depth in the minors for them as well. The Astros are a very well-built, solid team. I'd like to see them add a starter, maybe even two at the deadline. But certainly, I think they're going to coast to the division title. And then they're really good. The rubber's going to hit the road in the playoffs when they have to face a good team from another division.
All right, so the rest of the teams this division, I'm curious. First off, here's one question. Who do you think is going to finish last, the Angels or the A's?
That's a good question. With Trout being out, it's hard to like the Angels. Although they had a fascinating inning against the Braves the other day. I don't know if you caught that. The Trout's been out for three games, and the Angels have actually won two of them. One of them, they scored 9 runs, and they got all those runs in one inning against the Braves and Bartolo Colon. The Braves made 3 official errors and several other misplays where they effectively was ruled a fielder's choice because they threw to a base and didn't get an out. There was a sacrifice bunt that wound up being a single. Just everything went wrong. And so basically, that I don't give the Angels any credit for that. Albert Pujols hit a 3-run home run, I think, in the early in that inning. But the rest of it was just the Braves tripping over each other. You know, I don't really I think that the Mariners can get healthy. I think that the Rangers have some talent. I don't see anything on the A's that I really like. I think if the Angels get Trout back, they can keep ahead of the A's. So I think the A's will be last.
Okay, so that leads us, you know, Seattle is a team that, you know, they've got the longest playoff drought in baseball, and they got close last year. This they've come on a little bit of late. You know, they were that much as 8 or 9 games under 500. They've come on a little bit now. Do you think there's any hope for Seattle? Is there a way where you can squint and see them sneak into the wild card race, or is this kind of like getting away from me?
This is brutal. I mean, the Mariners, they have tortured their fans. You know, we talk about the Mets a lot, but the way the Mariners have tortured their fans in recent years, you know, in 2014. They won 87 games and they were right there, and it seemed like they were going to get there the next year, and then they sank back down 76. Last year they win 86. You're like, okay, no, really, this time they've got some more, you know, they've got some other things going on. They made the Walker trade. I praise the Diamondbacks for it, but I also praise the Mariners for it, because Segura was a good add. They needed a shortstop, and he's been good for them. And it's just they can't get off the mat and they can't get healthy. I just don't really think that the Mariners are going to get all the pieces back that they need. I don't believe they can get the pitching that they need, the starting pitching, to really compete. I don't think it's going to come from the guys they have. I mean, I don't, you know, whether or not King Felix and Iwakuma can come back and contribute. I'm not real optimistic. Felix, I feel like, again, pretty obviously in his decline phase, and we're starting to see injuries now, and I just feel like that's going to maybe gain some speed. I don't see him coming back and being an impact pitcher, maybe ever. Certainly he can contribute and he can eat some innings, but right now he's not even doing that. You know, and then Smiley being out for who knows how long. I don't see it coming together for them. I don't, and partially because they're off to such a poor start that I don't think they're going to try to add at the deadline. So they're not going to add the starting pitching they might need. You know, it looked good coming into the season. I thought they were gonna be there to challenge the Astros, but it's just too much bad stuff too early, and I don't think they're gonna recover.
And that leads us at last to Texas. It's funny, it's weird that Rodon Odor has just forgotten how to hit this year, but now they've got Beltre back. Hamels is back in a month. The rest of this division, I feel like, is going the other direction other than Houston. Is this a team that can make a run for a wild card spot?
I'm not a big believer in them, no. See, now the thing here is that there are other good teams. You know, like we talked about the AL East and how many teams there are going to be above 500. So it's a different situation than in the National League, where you might get an 84, 85 win second wild card team. In the American League, I don't think that the third place team in the AL East is going to have that few wins. So you're going to have to do better than that. And I don't think the Rangers are capable of doing better than that. They had that nice winning streak a few weeks ago. And I wrote a piece about them for Sports on Earth at the time. And I said, they, you know, up to that point in the season, they had the softest schedule in baseball. They hadn't played a single team from the AL East. And, you know, their interdivision teams, I think, were the Phillies and the Padres. And the day I wrote it, they were heading over to Boston. They got swept by Boston. They dropped 2-3 to Toronto. They dropped 2-3 to Tampa Bay. Tomorrow on Friday, they're going to face Houston. Then after 2 games with the Mets, they've got 3 against Washington. They've got 3 more against Houston. Then they've got a bunch more against the East. They've got Cleveland. It's just, they're going to get beat up badly over this stretch. And I think by the time you get to mid-July, they're going to be saying, how much can we get for you, Darvish?
Wow, that would be something. That is, imagining the bidding war for a Darvish in mid-July would be, it'd be quite something. The Astros and Cubs alone, I feel like, would be, never mind the Yankees and the Red Sox, and no, everybody, really.
Yeah.
All right, Cliff, this has been a blast. I'm excited to do this again with you 2 months after the trade deadline as everything kind of sorts itself out. Well, I love having your stuff on Sports Nerd, so thanks for yammering with me for a while.
Thanks so much for having me.
Okay, remind you, always follow Cliff on Twitter at CLIFFCORCH. Foran. I got that right. All right. Have a great week, everyone. We'll be back. I'll be back next week with Allison Footer with our regular podcast. But otherwise, remind you to please follow us and subscribe to us on iTunes. All that sort of business. Of course, read Cliff's stuff. He is great. Have a great weekend, everyone. And I'll talk to you next week. Bye.